Hello, good morning. This is Jamie from Still My Art Games, and I am excited to be here for my weekly one-hour chat with you. I have a couple topics to talk about today, as usual, but I'm also happy to entertain any questions that you have to ask, as long as they don't reveal any big spoilers. Not that we have any big spoilers in the works right now. Actually, no, we have plenty of spoilers in the works, but nothing that will be revealed in the very near future. Garrett, Dominic, Chad, Sylvie, good morning. Thank you for joining me today. It's a nice day here in St. Louis. And what do I have going on? Oh, today, I wanted to lead off with this today. I love seeing people in the comments here who have joined this conversation in the past and have felt comfortable commenting and asking questions and whatnot. But I wanted to today invite people, if you have never commented before on this live stream, I just wanted to say that you are welcome to comment. It's okay for you just to watch along and listen. But I also just wanted to invite you to comment. If you have something to share, or if you have a question to ask, I'm more than happy to answer it. And if you need maybe an opening to say something, I'll share with you my question of the day, which is, how have your gaming preferences changed over time, particularly among your favorite games? How have you noticed, like if you look back 5 years ago and then you look to the present day, what games were maybe you don't even have to name specific games, but how have the games that you played then evolved into the games that you play now, especially your favorite games, the games that you love to get to the table? So if you haven't ever commented, if you have commented before, you also are welcome to answer this question. But I wanted to particularly invite those who have never decided to comment in the past or rarely comment on the live stream, just to say that you are welcome here. And if you want to answer that question, I'd love to hear your answer in the comments here. One of the reasons I've been thinking about this is that 2 weeks ago, I posted my top 10 favorite games of all time as of right now. And someone named Matt popped up, sent me a message and said, "Hey, Jamie, I have created a chart of your top 10 list over the last 4 years that tracks how various games have come and gone on that list, how they've gone up and down among your favorites list." And I posted this chart on Instagram at Jamie Stigmeyer today, because it's a really neat chart, in my opinion, to see how certain games have persisted on the list, but maybe changed positions on the list over time. And other games have come and gone. They've appeared on the list once and then not been there in the future. So it's a neat list that has me thinking about how my favorite gaming preferences have changed over time. Garrett says that he's actually wearing the same shirt that I am today. This is the Stillmeyer Ambassador orange t-shirt that we encourage ambassadors to wear at events and conventions. Chad says, "Is there a reprint of Arts and Architecture in the works currently?" Yes, there is. There is a reprint of it. And he says, "Are you still garnering interested in signatures to meet a threshold?" No, we are definitely reprinting Arts and Architecture, which has proven to be, I believe, the most popular of the three Tapestry expansions. Monkey Butler answers my question of the day to say, "I want deeper, richer experiences than I did when I re-entered modern gaming." That's a way that their preferences have changed over time. Krista says, "I'm less willing to break out a game if there's a lot of setup or it takes too long to set up." Krista, that resonates with me 100%. If a game takes a long time to set up, it's definitely less likely to hit the table for me. And I'd add to that, for me too, if I feel like I have to relearn a game after not playing it for 6 months, a year, because of the user interface, the way the rules are structured, that makes me much less likely to get it back to the table as well. And then much less likely to make it back onto a favorites game list in the future. Philip comments in to say that he listens at work, so we can't really take time to comment, but he enjoys listening. And that's totally fine. Like for people who just want to listen along, that's and part of the reason I asked this question too, in addition to this chart I mentioned, is that I listen to a lot of podcasts. I watch a lot of YouTube channels, but I very rarely comment. It's fairly even less common that I watch or listen to something that's live that I could comment on, but I very rarely comment. And I kind of wanted to, I don't know, give permission to someone like me that it's okay to comment if you are compelled to do so, but if you don't want to, that's fine too. Nathan says he's bummed by daylight saving time. Yeah. Yeah. It's 10 a.m. here in St. Louis. Now we had our spring forward daylight saving, which has confused all the bodies in the Stillmeyer Cisco household here. Walter, our cat, it's actually good for Walter because Walter was starting to wake me up earlier and earlier. He doesn't know about daylight saving time, so he has continued to wake me up at what he thinks is the correct time, but it's actually a little bit later than normal. So I've been able to sleep a little bit past 7 o'clock over the last few days. But my body is still confused by the daylight. Oh, Tim, thank you, Tim. Tim reminds me to not forget to post questions. Thank you, Tim. Only took me 6 minutes today for someone to remind me to do that. Tim says, did you get your Let's Go to Japan game? I did. I'm going to get it to the table tomorrow. I'm really excited to play it and see what ideas it gives me for the Japan trip that I am indeed planning right now, that I'm excited to go on. Corey has a response to the question of the day. He says it's mainly from doing so many community events and demos. And Corey is very involved in his local community in getting people excited about games. He said that when he started out, he preferred heavy games, but he said it's really hard to introduce new people in the community to heavy games off the jump. That got me playing smaller games that I used to ignore. And a lot of my favorite games are now smaller, lighter, and medium weight games. That definitely resonates with me too, Corey. I do still love a heavy game in the right circumstance, but I've come to really appreciate lighter games over the years, lighter, shorter games. Like Krista said, shorter setup, easier to teach, easier to play. I like a little bit of both. I'm an omni gamer in that way, but I definitely have come to appreciate those games a lot more than before. And I've learned a lot as a game designer from them as well. The Champion Faction says, ignoring the question of which theme you prefer, which game do you prefer in terms of mechanisms, Disney Lorcana or Star Wars Unlimited? Yeah, so I just posted my video yesterday about my thoughts on Star Wars Unlimited, which I've only played once so far. I played Lorcana a couple times in a row on the weekend that it came out. That is a good question. In terms of mechanisms, because I really do like the theme for both. I think the theme for both is very clever, and I think how the theme is interwoven into the mechanisms for both of these games is also very clever. That's tough. Because I haven't played Lorcana in a little while. It's been off my mind a little bit. Still on my shelf over here. That's where I'm looking. Right now I'm definitely more likely to get Star Wars Unlimited to the table because it's newer. I like the snappy turns in Star Wars Unlimited. You know, it's hard for me to answer that, given that I've only played Star Wars Unlimited once. It's been a while since I played Lorcana, and Star Wars Unlimited is very fresh to me. The one thing I maybe can answer a little bit there is that I am really excited to draft Star Wars Unlimited, to play a draft of it. Whereas I'm not even sure if there is a draft format for Lorcana based on how the inking system works in it. Maybe there is, I'm not aware of it, but I think Star Wars Unlimited was at least built around the idea that you can draft these cards, and mechanically I think it would work quite well with a draft format. Yeah, have any of you, I think the pre-release was 2 weekends ago, and maybe the release was this past weekend, because I do have my copy of Star Wars Unlimited. Have any of you tried to play this new Star Wars game? And what did you think of it if you have gotten to play it? Let's see. Ian says, I've been big in the hobby for about 3 years. This big change in gaming is that his solo play has gone from BYOS. To rolling right, flipping right, to Automa AI and worker placement resource management. So you've seen changes in your solo play. Thank you for sharing that, Ian. Scott says, in your game designs, do you find that you start with a theme or a mechanism, or do you find one leads to a more natural process? For me, Scott, it's all mashed together. I would say typically I start with, I don't know, it really goes back and forth. Either I have a mechanism that I'm really excited about, or I have a theme that I am excited about and I want to apply mechanisms to it. But for me, no matter what the inception of the idea is, as soon as I start brainstorming, it becomes a mash of theme and mechanisms almost immediately. And trying to find mechanisms that fit the theme, to try to find themes or sub-themes that fit the mechanisms that I'm excited about. So I think rather quickly it becomes a mix of the two. And your question, do you find one leads to a more natural process? I like theme first designs. Like I always like thinking of a theme and then designing a mechanism around that theme. But that mechanism always also comes back around the other way. How is this mechanism informing the theme? What mechanisms do I really like, and what themes can I find to match them, or what sub-themes can I find to match them? So I find a mishmash approach of brainstorming works well for me, at least. Carlos says, have you researched if it's feasible to develop an AI assistant in the Stillmire Games website or the Stillmire Games scoring app for rules clarifications? In theory, it's possible, but not sure if it's cheap. An AI assistant. We don't do generative AI at Stillmire Games at all. We don't use it for writing, for editing, for art creation, none of that stuff. AI assistants are kind of a tricky middle ground because if an AI could learn the rules for a game and help someone learn those rules, that's a thing that could happen. But it isn't something that we're pursuing right now. So maybe someday that will be something that makes games more accessible for people. And if that is the case, if it increases accessibility, helps people get our games to the table, or helps people get games to the table in general, helps answer rules questions, I'm open to that sort of thing, but probably not something that we're going to invest in. Sam says, you had asked in a previous live stream how people feel about their top games not getting plays. Did this question influence your list this year? I think it did influence it a little bit, Sam. I think I may have asked that. Well, I can't remember exactly when I asked that question in relation to when I filmed my top 10, my current top 10 list, but it has been on my mind. A big question I asked myself as I was creating my current top 10 list was, am I actually actively trying to get these games to the table or not? These games that I consider my favorite games. But I believe I have a video coming up. Did I already film it? I may have already filmed it. Oh, no, I haven't filmed it yet. So I have a list about my favorite games that I don't actually play. That was the question that I asked a week or so ago. And I have not created my own list for that topic yet, but I do have some notes from the week, the live stream during which I asked that question. I did this past week's top 10 list was about roguelikes. So that was a question that I brought up a few weeks ago on the live stream about roguelike and roguelite deck building games in particular, not only deck building, but games that feel like tabletop games, but are mostly digital. So these are digital roguelikes, digital roguelite games. And so I did a video about that, that topic, my top 10 favorite digital roguelikes that I think tabletop gamers would have a lot of fun with. That was my video from this past week. I also wrote a post about gender in gaming. This was a topic that I think I brought up on last week's live stream. And what was my post this couple days ago? Marketing methods. Yeah, I did a post about, it's been a while since I did a post about like the 10 marketing methods that I find work really well for us. And so I wanted to share that list with the other people. That was my post the other day. Tony says, our group played Wormspan for the first time last night. He lost, but everyone gave the game two talons up or two thumbs up. Was there any thought about making the multiplier tokens wooden? With the upgraded tokens pack on the table, it stood out as one thing that was not upscaled. That's a good question, Tony. No, I actually didn't think about that. I haven't found the multiplier tokens to be used all that often. And I figured if you have the wooden tokens, then you can also substitute in cardboard versions of those tokens instead of even using the multipliers at all. I see what you're saying, but honestly, no, it wasn't something that I thought about. Naziz says, I wanted to ask you if I ever quit designing new games myself. Oh, no, he's asking if I have quit designing new games myself. Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I spent quite a bit of time designing Expeditions, which was released last year. And I'm currently working on, I'm always working on two games at a time. So I work on two games at a time. Which title of the board gaming industry do you personally resonate with the most? There's a word missing. Personally like the most, maybe? Designing, developing, publishing, marketing. I really like the variety. I like that my job involves variety. I like that it's some design, it's some development, it's a lot of project management and product creation. It's a lot of marketing. It's some people management and some of it's financial, some of it's operations. There's a little bit of everything that goes into my day. Some of it's just troubleshooting. A lot of it's customer service. So yeah, it bounces around throughout the day on any given day, any given week. And I really do like the variety. Chet says his wife wants to eventually play Ark Nova with me, but she is still a green gamer. What games or games would you suggest I play with her to ease into Ark Nova? Now, I did a video kind of on this topic a while ago, Chad, about sequential games to kind of bring someone into modern games one step at a time. And I don't remember if you search the word for sequential on my YouTube channel, I think you'll find the full list. It's five games for me and five games from a guest. but I remember it ending, my list ended with Wingspan. So I built up to Wingspan. And I think the next game after that could definitely be Ark Nova. I think Wingspan segues nicely into Ark Nova. So check out that list. I'm sorry, I can't remember it off the top of my head, but feel free to check out that list to lead your wife maybe up to Wingspan. As I mentioned that, I knocked over my chocolate of the day. I have some Hershey's Hugs from Valentine's Day as my chocolate of the day today. That is my little indulgence. What do you have as your little indulgence, your little treat, or your little chocolate of the day today? Thank you. Yeah, Ian defined BOIOS. Beat your own score. Got it. That makes sense. Chad says, Critical Role has recently made a few how-to videos for their new RPG called Daggerheart. It has some great new mechanisms to play an RPG. Have you seen this yet? I have not heard of that. I'm curious. I'll have to check that out, Chad. Feel free to share a link to a video that demonstrates the new mechanisms that you're thinking about in the comments here, and I'll check it out after I'm done the live stream. George comments here on the daylight saving as well. Ian says, were you involved in the Automa for Wormspan? I am not. I'm only involved in the multiplayer versions of our games, either as a designer or as a developer. The Automa stuff, the solo stuff is completely handled by Automa Factory. Yeah, but I'm glad you had a good experience with it. So the Champion Faction actually brought up a topic here that I wanted to ask, another question of the day today. They say, I played a 12-hour game of Twilight Imperium on Saturday, 12 hours. While I had fun, I confirmed my preferences as a Euro-style gamer. I played Clank Legacy and Red Rising yesterday and felt much more at home. I can definitely resonate with that. I'm much more of a Euro gamer as well. More agency, less disrupting what opponents are doing. But my question is about this 12-hour game length. I'm curious if you all ever had a whole day, or if you ever have a whole day, where you have nothing else to do except for play games. Do you ever want to use that time to play really long games? And which long games do you like to use for that time? There are some classic answers I can think of that Twilight Imperium is one that often comes up with this type of question. But I'm curious right now with you, this coming weekend, if you had a full day to do nothing but play games, would you play really long games or any really long games? And which really long games would you choose for this coming weekend, this Saturday? Hypothetical, but I'm just trying to anchor that with an actual day coming up soon. Cancel 623 says, did you fall out of love with Ark Nova with the new expansion? No, I really love Ark Nova with the new expansion. Ark Nova was still, even though it wasn't in my top 10 list, it is still in my, among my favorite games. I'm always happy to play Ark Nova. I always walk away having a great time playing Ark Nova. And even with the new expansion, I didn't mind anything that the new expansion was trying to fix in the original version of Ark Nova, but I think the expansion seamlessly integrates with Ark Nova, and I've had a great time playing it. Garrett, who played at the Star Wars Unlimited pre-release, says there are some cards that have two of the same aspect and has me interested in attempting a mono-color deck. Might not be enough cards yet, but they already have plans for the next two sets. So the color system in Star Wars Unlimited is really, really interesting, where the resources that you spend to play cards are always, in using magic terms, are always colorless. So the mana you use or the resources you use have no color associated with them. Rather, colors matter on cards. If you see colors appear on cards, like Garrett mentioned, two of the same aspect, actually, is what Garrett is mentioning. But so if you have two blue icons on a card, you also have a cost above that card that says like 3. And so if you have blue icons on your home base or your character card, then you can ignore those blue icons. If you don't, then you have to increase the cost to play that card by 2 for each of those icons. So in this case, 2 blue icons, standard cost of 3. If you have no blue, that card would cost you 7. Rather expensive. Still possible to play, but rather expensive. So I love the flexibility this adds. It means that any card can go into your deck. It's just more expensive if you don't have those aspects, those colors on your home base or your character. I think it's a really, really clever tweak on the magic system where you can be hamstrung by the mana colors that you have in your deck. Really neat system there. Luke says he's been in the hobby board gaming space for about 4 years and he likes a variety of games. But before that, I played a lot of poker and trick taking games. You know, Luke, that is very similar to me. I played a lot of poker. My weekly game night for many years was a weekly poker night that I hosted until we merged into modern gaming and not losing money every week to each other. Julie says we had her sister and brother-in-law over to play Charterstone this weekend and are looking forward to playing again. Was playtesting the Legacy game different from playtesting other games? It very much was. I'm smiling because it was a very different process than designing other games. Because with a Legacy game, the choices that you make later in the campaign have design implications after and before that point of time. So you have to look at this huge web of decisions that any players can make, especially since in Charterstone, you're unlocking things in very different orders from game to game and campaign to campaign. So playtesting, and also with Legacy games, a big part of it is the unknown, venturing into the unknown. It's hard for me as the designer to pretend that I don't know that something is coming up. So a lot of the playtesting was... Really, the blind playtesting was very different. Normally, with blind playtesting, we send digital files to people to print at home, to our lead playtesters, to print and play with their friends and family over usually three sessions. With Charterstone, we needed people to play a full campaign plus one additional game after the campaign. So it's 13 total games, and we needed them to not spoil everything in the campaign before actually playing it. So I paid someone to assemble the prototypes and mail them to groups that were committed to playing that many games. And it was a very tricky process because it was very expensive to do that. And the campaigns didn't always work all that well. Some of these groups would encounter cards that weren't balanced, text that didn't make sense, because that's part of the playtesting process. And so I really had to work with playtesters, lead playtesters to work around those shortcomings so they could continue to play the campaign and not have the campaign just be ruined. And I did run into some, it was a good way for me to learn more about playtesters, because there were some playtesters that just couldn't do that. Like, they would just let a player in their group use the same broken card over and over and over again after we knew it was broken, after they knew it was broken. And it would ruin a lot of the remaining playtesting experience. That data would have been really helpful for me to have. That was one example, but I learned other things like that about lead playtesters, that there are certain characteristics that I need to seek out in a lead playtester to learn from those types of things, but not prevent those types of things from ruining a playtest. Yeah, so I learned a lot from playtesting a Legacy game, and I don't want to do it again. Jonathan says that he's been moving away from lighter and party games. I'm moving away from them. I think it is because I mostly play solo these days and find more joy in complex decisions. In groups, the game doesn't matter, so we play old favorites. That's interesting that you've moved towards solo gaming. You still have some times where you play games with groups, and the games might be different from group to group versus your solo play. Jeff says, we're 2 weeks into Survivor 46. I'm loving Survivor Season 46 so far. Any favorite players yet? I'm still figuring it out, Jeff. I don't want to spoil anything about the first two episodes in case anyone hasn't watched them yet. But for the two players who have been voted out so far, I think they would have been fun to have along, but I haven't really, I don't think I'll miss them all that much. There's still some great characters arraigning in the game. Great casting as usual, but I need to learn more about them first before I fully decide if I'm rooting for someone or rooting against someone. Tony says, how's my open world game coming along? Any info that might get released this year? I think there will be some info about this game released in 2024, but it will not be a 2024 release game. Yeah. It is going really, really well, though. Christopher says, have I seen or played Let's Go to Japan? It's on my shelf, but I haven't played it yet. I did receive my Kickstarter copy just the other day. Christopher says it combines some interesting mechanisms like closed drafting, simultaneous action selection, and set collection. I'm excited to play it, Christopher. Yeah, I'm going to play it tomorrow. Let's see. I'll try to catch up on comments, and I'll go back to my... Well, I had that question about long gaming a few minutes ago. I have a few other topics here, but I'll try to stay on top of questions first. The Champion Faction says that he could see a Libertalia Legacy version happening. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do agree that something like that could happen in a game like Libertalia. Ray's popping in to say hi. He's asking if I played the game Gnar. We'll assume that the K is silent. I don't really know. I have played it. I played it on Board Game Arena a couple months ago, and I have a video about it on my YouTube channel. Beverly says that she got Viticulture Outlets Tuscany today to the table to play after she gets her chores done. It's been over 6 months since she last played. That's awesome. Yeah, I hope you have fun with it. She says, I also am watching through the Board Game Garden TV Solo Sunday with Jenna. Beverly, yeah, I remember you were the one that inspired us to reach out to Jenna and ask her to do a solo playthrough, which she was very kind to do. And hopefully you have fun watching that and playing solo as well. There you go. Chad found the video I was talking about. 5 sequential gateway games to welcome into modern tabletop gaming. Hopefully that's helpful to get your wife up to Ark Nova if she wants to get there. Of course, not every game is for every person. No one is required to play any game. But yeah, if she has fun with it, go for it. Oh, this is cool. Jordan says there's a March Madness style tournament being hosted, which starts next week, maybe for the cover art by Andrew Bosley, which includes a few Stillmeyer games. That's impressive that Andrew has so many games that he could fill a bracket of like a March Madness style bracket now with his art. He's a very prolific, very talented artist. Steve says that his taste in games is whatever gets players to the table. I like that approach, Steve. That's a very selfless approach. He says his wife is in the mid or lightweight. Oldest son loves heavy games. Middle son loves social deduction. And youngest is into anything without luck. Interesting. No luck at all for the youngest. That's interesting. I tend to associate games with more luck with younger people. So it's interesting to hear that isn't the case. Chad tried to post the Play Dagger Heart video. Maybe the StreamYard isn't letting the link go here. But Chad, I'll look it up later with how to play Dagger Heart. Thank you for sharing that. Here, I'll pull that up here. I'll share my other screen and try to... Well, now I'll do it later. I'll do it later. Let's see. So getting to the question about if this coming Saturday was a full day of gaming for you, would you play longer games on that day? And what longer game would you choose? Garrett says, I would probably start a new campaign game that's been sitting on the shelf and get 5 or 6 games of it in. That's cool. I can see that. Megan and I often play those campaign games together for longer stretches on the weekend. We have a gaming snack preference here. Seasoned chicken tenderloins. Nice. Good. Yeah, gaming snacks are fun. Chad says he has a game. He has a friend who loves Twilight Imperium and wants to commit a day to it sometime soon. But he also has a great experience playing multiple chapters of a campaign. Yeah, I haven't even thought of using a campaign game for a longer day of gaming, but I really like that answer too. Corey from Blue Falcon is actually this Saturday. He's providing the board game library for local convention and will be running demos for 12 hours that day. That's awesome, Corey. Very generous of you to do that for your local convention. Feel free to mention the name of the convention here if you think people in the area, the name and the area, in case you think people might want to stop by. Corey says he would want to learn to play a 1 to 2 hour game. The first play of the game always takes longer. He has Charterstone sitting on his shelf waiting right now. Yeah, that is a good, when you have a longer time like that, it can be a little bit more relaxed to learn a game and then play it on that same day. Sit down, learn, and play. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Ray says he would play more long games because I almost never get them to the table. Like Game of Thrones, Gloomhaven, even things that take a little longer than average, like Dune Imperium. Yeah, I'm excited to play Dune Imperium Uprising, which I haven't played yet. And I'm guessing that's a little longer playing time for the games that I usually play. The Z, similar to me, he says, I like my games 2 hours max. And that is typically what is the case for me too. And even that happens when I play longer games, even when I have more time to play those longer games, because I guess my attention span, I want to do something. I want to play another game. He says, I much prefer playing 6 different games on a single day than playing one game for too long. I'm moving more and more towards gateway games as I'm getting older. Yeah, that was kind of reflected on my top 10 list recently too. Ian would choose Mansions of Madness. Scott says, do the Stillmeyer Games project code names have any connection to the games, or are they just random? They're not random. They're definitely references to something. Sometimes a red herring, but a reference to something. Yeah. Ian says he doesn't really play long games, anything over 1.5 hours. Yeah, that's 1.5, 2 hours is often the limit for me. Academy Champlou says, with a full day of gaming, I think I would like to play multiple games in a series like the West Kingdom Tome Saga. Yeah, that would be cool to find a few games in the same series, like one from Red Raven, one from Garfield Games, or Garp Hill Games. I always mix up which one is the correct one there. Garp Hill? Garfield? Champion Faction loves all-day gamings. I usually prefer multiple different games throughout the day, but if it's one game, I'd want a campaign or legacy game like Sleeping God, Scythe, The Rise of Fenris, Charterstone, etc. Love these answers about long games. Tony has one too. Ark Nova, Sea of Legends, Eldritch Horror. Merlin's Manor is doing that today, actually. Another all-day gaming day this Saturday. And he likes to play a bunch of mid-range length games, like 2 to 3 hours when gaming all day. Hilda says, we used to do that. She used to host days like this at Sunday before she moved to Orlando. They'd start at noon, and it was usually a mix of one long game and then a mix of shorter games, 30 to 60 minutes. Break up the day with some healthy snacks. That's awesome. That's wonderful, Hilda. I'm sorry that hasn't been able to continue since you moved to Orlando. I'm sure people would love to try that again, but I know gaming groups and locations change things over time. I'm going to come back to comments in a second. Let me read off the rest of my list real quick. You can bounce around if these give you any ideas, things you want to talk about today. I went to a hockey game this past Saturday. I don't follow hockey. I haven't been to a hockey game in like 20 years, but my cousin plays for the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, and they were in town for a tournament here in St. Louis. My aunt and uncle were also visiting to watch him play. And so I went and watched the game. You know, I wanted to support my cousin, and it was actually a lot of fun. I was reminded of how much fun random live sports can be just when you decide to give it a try and maybe pick a team if you have a team. Like I had no allegiance to either team, and it just so happened that the team they were playing was Mizzou, which is the University of Missouri. So there was quite a few fans on the opposing side here at this game, and there was a good atmosphere basically for this game. So it was a lot of fun. It ended in an overtime loss for the team that I was rooting for my cousin's team. But my cousin played well. He played really, really well and almost won the game for them a couple times in overtime. So I wonder if any of you ever had that experience where you go to a live sporting event for a sport that you do not follow, you do not really care about, but you end up finding yourself getting into the game more and more as you sit there and watch the game. That was definitely my experience on Saturday. I happen to be reading the Beartown series of books, the Beartown trilogy, which is all about hockey, or at least about a hockey town. And so my mind's been on hockey a lot recently due to those books. So it was fun to have those two coincide. Some games I played recently, Star Wars Unlimited, which we've been talking about today a little bit. My virtual gaming night last week, I played Veil of Eternity on Board Game Arena. Had a lot of fun with that. And also, Wingspan's birthday was on March 8th. I believe that was last Thursday or Friday. Wingspan celebrated its 5th birthday, 5 years after its retail release. And so I invited people this weekend to play Wingspan, to share their stories about Wingspan, their preferred ways to play Wingspan, all that sort of stuff. I'm curious if any of you got Wingspan to the table for its birthday weekend. Also, I wanted to show, we got... and hopefully I won't get emotional here. It's okay if I get emotional too. My beloved cat Biddy died back in September. And it's been a very difficult process of grieving and processing it. And we wanted to put together a book to celebrate Biddy's life. And a friend gave us a gift card to a place called Artifact Uprising. And so Megan very kindly spent some time putting together this wonderful photo album that is just all about Biddy's life. We went with this big book, hundreds of photos in it that goes and shows Biddy's life. And it's, it's meant a lot to me to just have the book on the table. I found myself like in idle moments, just going over to the book and looking at it and remembering how special Biddy was to me. So anyway, I wanted to mention it because of the tangible element of it. A lot of the photos in my life now, you know, are on my phone. They're on my computer. It's rare that I have an actual photo album, but putting this together has been helpful for us, for me. I don't know if it's been good for the grieving process or if it's helped me just remember how special Biddy was to me, but I really like the tactile element of it. I wanted to recommend it. The company that we used for it was a company called Artifact Uprising. And any other topics? Oh, watched a lot of movies recently. Watched the Wonka movie, the Mean Girls musical, and Damsel. All pretty good movies. I put Wonka at the top of that list as my favorite of the three, but I enjoyed all three. And last, today I'm going to be on a podcast called Bards of the Board. It's a new-to-me podcast. I have subscribed because I listened to one of their episodes and really enjoyed it. And I'm going to join them for a short chat today for an episode that will probably go live later this week or next week. That's Bards of the Board. And I feel like I'm in the hunt for more gaming podcasts recently. I have some good ones that I subscribe to, but I want a little bit more gaming content on my podcast. So if any of you listen to any gaming podcasts that you really, really enjoy the way that people talk about games, especially if they spend a little bit more time going into a game and what they and analyzing the game itself. Like, I don't need long explanations of how a game works. And I also don't want, I like it when they spend more than just a minute or two on a game. I want a little bit of a deeper dive analysis of the game. That's the type of gaming podcast I'm looking for right now, if you have any recommendations. Back to your lovely comments here. Paige answered my question about shifts in favorite games over time. She says, I shifted to much easier to teach games, but with deep complexity. Games with cards can be great about this because the general rules taught at the start of the game can be simple with card text adding as you go. Again, a lot of these comments resonate with me. That resonates with me too, Paige. I love these, especially these tableau building or deck building games that give you a few simple cards to understand at the beginning of the game. And then the emergent complexity of the game comes from all the vast variety of cards that you can find in games like Wingspan, Wormspan, Earth, Ark Nova, and a variety of deck building games as well. Wendy says, if she has a larger block of time for games, she's more likely to play a new game where she needs to learn the rules and teach. Someone else mentioned this a few minutes ago, too. It's not necessarily longer in terms of game time, but it affords her more time to learn and teach. I like that, Wendy. I like that a lot. That happens for me at Geekway to the West. When I go to the game convention that I usually attend, I'm not always learning the game on the fly, but I'm there to learn games from other people often. And I there's extra time to do that there because it's a longer gaming convention setting. Julie says, a long game is anything over 2 hours due to our stage of life. With childcare, we would play Terraforming Mars or Ark Nova plus some shorter games. If Julie had a day of childcare without the kids, I think we split those across evenings now. Nice. Terraforming Mars or Ark Nova. I haven't played Terraforming Mars in a couple of years now. I need to get that back to the table. Keith says, definitely testing legacy and story games are a lot more challenging than a standard 60 to 90 minute Euro. So I recently put Role Player Adventures, one of Keith's creations, at the top of my list, one of my favorite games, as my favorite game of all time right now. And it's such a feat of design because of the consequences in the game, but those consequences are not easy to design. I think that's why they stand out so much. If you make a choice in Role Player Adventures, not only does that choice impact you right away, but it also comes back to impact you, you know, five games later, or even on an ongoing basis. And so Keith has to plan for, what does that mean if someone makes a different choice? How does that impact this web of choices and consequences in Role Player Adventures? Very difficult to design around and to play test around too. Sam says that he went from chasing games similar to games he grew up on, nostalgia, like Heroescape and Hearts. He now finds himself avoiding games similar to them since nostalgia seems to affect his new plays. That's interesting. Sam, the effect of how nostalgia can go both ways. Darius says, I'm aware that you initially used the crowdfunding model for Stonemark Games before transitioning to self-publishing through your own website web store. Unfortunately, I'm unable to utilize any crowdfunding platform for his print and play game. What suggestions would you have for marketing it without the boost that crowdfunding provides? Darius, actually, I'm glad you mentioned this. I wrote an article about marketing just on Monday. So there's the top 10 ways that I market games. I just went through that list the other day. Let's see if I can pull that up and skim through it here on my other screen so you can see some things, some approaches. I gotta get out of full screen. There we go. I'll pull up the Stonemaier Games blog here so you can see. And I also feel like I did another article recently about this topic a little bit about, what to do, how to market. Yeah, I'm bringing up two things here. So, and I'll show you how to get there so you can read these in more detail. So show my screen. I go to the blog first. Here is 10 marketing methods used at Stonemaier Games. They range from giving people reasons to get the game to the table. That's something that you do after the game is already published. Reviewers, always big. Content marketing. Yeah, you can read through this list. I'll just scroll through it a little bit right here. Retailers, local, yeah, you're not at retailers yet. Pre-launch, having like places where people can sign up for it. Obviously, you need to let those people know that it exists too, but you also need to have them give them some way to sign up. But the other article I thought of is in the top 10 list. It's another one that I wrote about fairly recently. And this is one that you'll definitely want to check out. So go to blog top 10 list and then go to 10 ways to thrive without crowdfunding. This is another fairly recent top 10 list or 10 list that talks about not necessarily only marketing, but also different methods that you can use that are crucially important, I think, if you are not using crowdfunding. Yeah. Good question. Ian says, would you consider producing television shows or films? No, I mean, I have my plate full producing board games, so I don't really have time to produce shows or films. If you're asking if we would ever license our intellectual property for someone else to produce a TV show or film, I'm certainly open to that. Yeah, I don't think that we have many games that would translate to that format or would bring enough eyes in for someone to justify making a whole game based off of, you know, Viticulture, even with Viticulture being a very well-selling game, with the exception maybe of Scythe. Like, I think Scythe is, it's a visually compelling world, and it's a world that Jakub Rozalski holds the rights to. And I think someday there might be a TV show or a movie based on the world of Scythe or based on the 1920 plus world that that Jakub created. That will be independent of us. We only have the tabletop rights to that world. So if Jakob's working on it, that is independently of us. Chad says, well, you need to take a vacation after finishing your open world game. Has this been your longest design yet? Definitely has been my longest design so far. Yeah, I've been designing it for around 7 years now. Will I take a vacation afterward? I don't know. Probably not. I don't think it will impact my vacation schedule if I'm going to take a vacation. But it will certainly feel good when I send those files to the printer. Absolutely. Mark says, what do you think I should do to encourage crowdfunding projects to include his country to ship their games to? Felt like we're missing out on a lot due to this restriction. That's a good question, Mark. And I appreciate you trying to approach it in a constructive way and not in a, I don't know, I'll use some words here, demanding, entitled, aggressive way. I think sometimes I see those approaches and I don't see much success in using those types of approaches. I think maybe the best way, or a way, maybe not the best, but a way is to A, demonstrate that there is interest, demonstrate that you have people who want to buy the games, and demonstrate that they are willing to pay for shipping. So show the creators, hey, I know that it is expensive to ship here, but we are willing to pay that price to get the games into our area. I think that's a way to go. Especially since so many creators now are using fulfillment centers in different regions. So they may not be using one in your region, but they might be using one in a region that will ship to your region at a cost, at a high cost. But if you demonstrate, hey, we've got the people and we're willing to pay the cost, particularly probably as group buys, but we want to buy three at a time and we're willing to pay $60 shipping for that and split it amongst the three of us. I think creators might resonate with creators. Yeah. Good luck with that. Tony says, just curious, why no watch it played video with Rodney? Good question. I have an answer in the FAQ that I'll show you right over here. Well, do I have it? I don't know if I have it in the FAQ. Maybe it isn't in the Wormspan FAQ, but I have answered it before. The answer is, I love Rodney. I love watch it played. But with Wormspan I knew was going to probably be the most visible game that we have ever released out of the gate. And so I wanted to shine the spotlight on a smaller content creator that I think deserves the spotlight as well. And I didn't think Rodney is great for exposure, which I appreciate for many of our games. I didn't think Wormspan necessarily needed that. I think people were going to find out about it regardless of Rodney. So I decided to try to elevate a smaller creator and went with Meeple University for the rules video for Wormspan. And I think that they did a fantastic job for it. I will also still continue to work with Rodney in the future, but for Wormspan in particular, I thought it was better to elevate a smaller creator. Let's see. As for my longer games question, if you have a day of gaming, Jonathan said, I'd continue Tainted Grail or Breakout War of the Ring. I need to play War of the Ring. I played the card game, but not the full game. So that could be one. He says he doesn't mind games at all, but most of his group, or long games at all, but most of his group prefers 60 to 90 minutes max. Jordan says that Andrew's tournament, March Madness tournament, is in the Wits End Discord. Awesome. Thanks for the heads up about that, Jordan. Nate says, if you allow me to choose a different date in the near future, not exactly this Saturday, but a different date, he would go with Eclipse Second Dawn for the Galaxy on April 8th after the total solar eclipse. Yeah, that's a perfect timing for that game. That's a perfect day to play that game. I like that, Nate. Good call. Paige says that this Sunday we're having a game night for a belated birthday, for her belated birthday. Happy birthday, Paige. But we're going to try to play a lot of shorter games, maybe max of 1 hour per game. That way we can play replay our favorites of the night. I like that. That is one of the benefits of playing shorter games, that you can play them and then get them back to the table right away. Mark says, thanks for the video on Flip Town. He says, I bought the PMP version recently and hope it is another Vermin right that I will love. Rolling Realms has become my standard for Vermin rights. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. I know you've put a lot of creativity into the various fan realms that you've made for Rolling Realms. And I hope you like the Flip Town. I had a good time with my first play of it. Okay, here's the event that Corey was talking about. It's in Catlettsburg, Kentucky, called GoboCon. And it's about 2.5 hours away from Columbus, Lexington, or Parkersburg. It's a first time convention. I hope it goes well, Corey. And thank you it's awesome that you're driving pretty far to go to this convention and to demo games there all day. That's very generous of you to do that. Hilda does say that she's talked about how her gaming group has changed after a move, but she says we now have a really nice group of gamers here in Orlando. Hilda also posts about disc golf on Instagram, which I love to see Hilda and her husband getting into disc golf and some friends too. We played disc golf this past weekend. I had kind of a low-key day. I needed a low-key disc golf day. Sometimes I put a little too much pressure on myself and it gets to me. And I don't think that's good for me to do that. And so I had a lower-key day with friends Alex and Eric at Jefferson Barracks and had a great time playing there. Ooh, Garrett said that he just started reading A Will of the Many based on my recommendation a few months ago. I hope you're enjoying it. Yeah, it's quite a book. I'm really excited to see what happens next in that series of books. Only one book out so far. So I asked a question a few minutes ago about, have you ever gone to a sporting event for a sport that you're not into? And did you find yourself getting into it anyway, just by being there live? And Corey says he went to a semi-pro wrestling show a few years ago. It was a blast. I had friends performing in the show. I don't watch wrestling. It's just not my thing, but they put on a really good show. You know, I need to do that because I have some judgments about wrestling. I don't mind that anyone else does it, but I'm not interested in wrestling. But I bet I would have a lot of fun if I went to it and saw it live. So I need to do that sometime. Jonathan says about Cardinals games. I always have fun at Cardinals games, but even though he has little interest in baseball, he loves going to St. Louis City games as well. Yeah, St. Louis City soccer team. I haven't been to a game there yet, but the stadium looks like it's been packed out. It looks like a great crowd at those St. Louis City games, the soccer team that we have, fairly new soccer team here in St. Louis. Hilla says that she even met some new friends for new Florida friends in St. Louis at Design Day. That's awesome. Alvin says, what's my opinion on tile placement for board generating? Tile placement for board generating. So creating the map as you go. I feel like I might have a video about this, but I can't remember the title that I used for the video. But yeah, I think someone asked me about this recently, Alvin, so I've been thinking about it. I think there are pros and cons to it. The pros are the element of discovery and exploration and variability. The cons are, from a design perspective, you have a lot less control over the structure of the board. And so it can end up being, imbalances can emerge pretty quickly from the tiles that you're placing for creating that board. So I think that's the pro and the con there. So if it's a game that where the balancing doesn't emerge from those tiles themselves, if it emerges from other elements of the game, I think it can be a great way to showcase discovery and exploration. But if the game really needs that balance for it to function well, then I would go for a set board instead of tile placement in that way. Let's see. Ray says, what did I think of Dune Part 2? Yeah, I saw Dune a couple weeks ago. I managed to see it in the theater twice so far. I loved it even more the second time. That's awesome. I love seeing it in the theater, packed house. I thought the movie was beautifully filmed, from the smaller moments to the big epic moments that happened. I loved the sandworm riding, just having the camera like right behind Paul Atreides as he's riding the sandworm or trying to ride it was incredible. Like it felt very real. Really, really cool experience. I loved watching it in the theater. Here we go. I asked for some podcast recommendations. Champion Faction says, I'm not sure if this is exactly what I'm looking for, but This Game Is Broken is currently his favorite board game podcast. Beyond Solitaire is also a favorite for context and design, especially of historical games. Yeah, thank you for those recommendations. I'll make a note of them. Yeah, thank you. Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that recommendation. Beverly recommends Tabletop for One by Daniel Anderson. I always learn something very enjoyable. Tabletop for One. Yeah. I think I recognize these maybe from our reviewer list, but I'm not entirely sure. Let's see. Board Game Hot Takes. Jonathan mentioned Board Game Hot Takes. I do like Board Game Hot Takes, and I do like the time they spend on games. Let's see if there's any other recommendations. Susanna likes Talk Cardboard and Board Game Hot Takes. Steve says, what are a game publisher's thoughts? I'm a game publisher. I can give you some thoughts on other companies selling premium components for their games. For example, Etsy has premium player mats that for tokens that slot in to prevent them from bumping or inserts. Steve, yeah, my approach on it is that as long as a third-party creator follows the guidelines that we put out there for third-party creation, we support that. And we don't ask for royalties or anything like that. We want those creators to be creative with our games, to spread the love of our games, and not add to the price just so they can pay for royalty. But it is really important that they follow our guidelines. And one of those guidelines is actually that you can't replicate a core gameplay component of the game. If you want to upgrade a token from a cardboard token to a wooden token, totally fine. But if you want to use a player mat, if you want to replicate a player mat, that is not okay. If you want to make cards for one of our games, that is not okay. And so if a company is doing that, you mentioned here on Etsy, if there's a company on Etsy that is selling premium player mats for a Stillmeyer game, that is not okay for them to do, unfortunately. It's okay for them to do like an overlay that goes on top of the player mat, but to actually replicate the player mat, that is a core gameplay component. And that is that's an intellectual property and copyright violation. So they really shouldn't be doing that. I do appreciate any company that has the respect and the courage to just reach out to me and say, hey, I'm looking to make this component. Is this okay? And I can send them the guidelines. They can sign off on the guidelines. They can understand how those guidelines work. Another part of it, too, is they need to make it very clear that what they're selling is not an official Stillmeyer product, because otherwise it can get confused. People think, oh, this might be an official Stillmeyer thing, whereas it isn't. So hopefully most people follow those guidelines. I know some people don't, but a lot of people do. Chad says, here's an interesting loophole to the side of the games being finished. If 1920 Plus ever got a movie or TV series, would you ever consider making a new game based off of it? Probably not. I mean, I would probably want any creations that we make in the 1920 Plus world to be independent of, complementary. We already have the complementary. We have Scythe, we have Expedition. So our current plan for that world is to make a few expansions for Scythe Expeditions. Not for Scythe, for Expeditions specifically. Julio says, I wanted to ask if you've thought about doing a Stillmeyer calendar. I don't know, Julio. What do you mean by that? What are you thinking of when you think of a calendar for Stillmeyer games? Like, are you referring to just like literally a wall calendar that has images of our boxes in the calendar, that sort of thing? For that, we don't have plans to do that. Do you or others have ideas for solo deck builders that are not dueling games? Solo deck builders that are not dueling games. I'm sure there are some deck building games that play well solo, but I haven't played them solo. There are a few deck building games. There are a few bad building games like Coffee Roasters and I think it's Warp Drive maybe that are bag building games that are designed specifically for solo play. Those are two that come to mind. I'm sure there are some other ones though that other people might recommend. Oh, but maybe you're referring to deck construction games where the construction happens outside of the game, opposed to a deck builder where the building happens during the game. That I don't know much about. Yeah. Merlin's Manor says, I'll let you know that my how to play and playthrough of the solo mode of Wormstone will go live at noon. Awesome timing. That's great. You can try to share a link here. We'll see if it lets you post the link. But thank you for doing that. So much for doing that. I really appreciate that. Chad says he appreciates the slow, methodical way that they explained games instead of trying. And really, it's a rules replacement video when Meeple University or a channel like Watch It Play does it. They are not just explaining the core concepts of the game. They are using the video as a complete replacement for the rules. And I agree they do that really well. Ian says, you answered a question of mine about Wormstone last week. Can I use the clip for his upcoming video on Wormstone? Absolutely, of course. Yeah, definitely. I appreciate you asking, but yeah, absolutely. You're welcome to do that. I'm running out of time here. Let's see. Level Up Board Game as a recommendation for podcast. I feel like I might already subscribe to that. I'm not sure. I'll take a look at that. Brady's talking about the new Dune movie. I was very impressed by the quality of the special effects. He completely forgot what was real and what was fake. Yeah, something about, I don't know if it's the sand of the planet, like the desert or what it is, but it feels like a lot of practical effects, even though I'm sure quite a bit of it was not actually practical. It was actually CGI, but it seamlessly blends in with the realism of the movie. I totally agree. Horde of the Board asked if they missed anything. How much did I miss? You missed the last hour, but you can go back and watch it. You can go back and look at the comments if you want. He has wings, or they have Wing Wormstand, and they love it. I hope when an expansion comes out that it'll be different than the Wingspan expansion. Certainly, it's a different game, so they'll definitely be different than the Wingspan expansions. Specifically, when it comes to the Dragon Guild board, yeah, I think if we do make an expansion for Wormspan, that the dragon adding more Dragon Guild tiles will be a natural way to expand the game. We don't have any expansions in the works right now, though. Corey says, did you see that the House of 1000 Corpses, the game Kickstarter, got put on hold due to an IP dispute? Apparently, it's specifically due to the use of a likeness of an actress and not the story itself. Interesting. Yeah, that's the tough thing about an IP game. You have all these little rules that you have to follow. It's why I generally avoid IP games. I made an exception for Scythe because I was kind of helping Yaka build the IP together, and also for Red Rising because I really love Red Rising. But that was a very cumbersome process to go through, the Red Rising process. Fortunately, we didn't have to deal with anything like this. That's very tricky with IPs. Let's see. Alvin has a question about, Alvin had the question about creating the board of a game from using tiles. He says, I'm working on his first pitchable game. In this game, it has tile placement, board generation, but it has rules in place that allow or requires players to place tiles representing resources that become available to anyone who goes there to generate them. Like every third tile laid of at least two spaces by a player, the resource available to the tile can be placed on the tile, allowing it to become a resource yielding tile. Do you think this is a good approach to the unbalancing? It could be. It's hard to answer that on the fly. I would say if the rule is explained in the UI of the game, so if players don't have to remember that rule, it's as they place the tile somehow is communicating to them what they can or cannot do. I think that's fair. So use the UI, use your graphic design, even in the prototype, to convey that information to players so it isn't something they need to remember. If you can do that, I think you can probably also find some balance there too. Or it sounds like you're trying to use that to balance the game. That definitely has potential. Ray says, the YouTuber Thomas Flight has an interesting video on the quality of Dune 1 special effects and why they look so good. Thomas Flight. I'll look that up. Thomas Flight Dune. Thank you. Yeah, I'll take a look at that, Ray. Thank you. Ian says, is there a place to go for rules questions regarding Wormspan? There are three places. One is the Wormspan Facebook group. One is the Wormspan FAQ page on our website. And I'd recommend looking through the FAQ briefly first before asking the question. It's probably already there or could be already there. And three, on BoardGameGeek in the Wormspan forums. We're happy to, you only have to ask one. So don't ask in all three places. Just ask in one place of your choice of those three and we will answer your question there for sure. Mark says, do you think you would approach the Pokemon Company again about a Pokemon and Wingspan crossover? It's possible. We'll try that again someday. Again, talking about IPs, I think working with an IP could be a big struggle to do that. But if it wasn't too difficult to work with the Pokemon Company on a Pokemon version of Wingspan, sure, we would consider it. I think that would bring joy to people. So that's something that we'd probably consider. Did you get your Let's Go to Japan? We did get ours. Dayman J got theirs and they're enjoying it so far. I haven't played my copy yet, but I'm playing it tomorrow. I'm really excited to play it. And last, let's do one last question here from Academy Champlu. If there wasn't so much to go through, what IP would you love to develop into a game? I want a Malazan game so badly. What IP would I love to develop into a game? There's one in mind that I won't mention because it is possible that it might happen someday. I honestly am more interested in developing our own intellectual properties than bringing another world to life in a game that we have. There are probably exceptions to that. Oftentimes coming from books that I really love, like the the last year, I really, really loved the Fifth Wing. I love the two Fifth Wing books that came out last year. And I think they're already tied up in an Amazon show. So that's not going to happen for a tabletop game. But for the most part, yeah, I am more interested in creating our own worlds than putting other worlds on the tabletop that already exist. Oh, and Chad also mentions a fourth place for answering questions. The Stillmire Games Discord is indeed a great place to get very fast answers to rule questions, if you prefer that sort of social media to a Facebook format. Awesome. I think that wraps up today. I'm going to go have some lunch and eat my chocolate of the day and look at my biddy book a little bit, of course. Thank you all for joining me today. This has been a pleasure to hear your answers to questions, to answer your questions, and just to chat with you. And if you have any other questions that come up, feel free to ask them in the comments of the YouTube version of the video at any time. I'm happy to answer there. All right, take care. Have a great day. Bye.